defending liberty 1 hour at a time, and broadcasting from the RWB Network Studios in New York, you're listening to The Rhino Report. Always right.
Let's get ready to rumble!
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Son, your ego is writing checks your body can't cash.
She got chunked. You are very rude.
If you want to turn yourselves into a greasy spot on a country road somewhere, go right ahead.
And now, here's your host, The Rhino.
Hello, hello, hello. I am The Rhino, and this is my report. Today, finally, February 1st, 2016. Unless, of course, you're listening on Red State Talk Radio Studio B, in which case the caucuses are over because it's 1 a.m. on February 2nd. Maybe we have a winner by now. I don't know. This is going to be awfully close, folks. It has been 315 days since the first candidate declared. $150 million spent in Iowa. 15 candidates. It all comes down to today. We're going to talk about none other than Iowa for a good portion of today's show. And we have some brand new polls we have to get to right off the bat before Iowans go to caucus. But first, we're going to do the same thing we always do and salute our country with the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, the Pledge of Allegiance always brought to you here on the Rhino Report by the kids. Like I've always told you guys, if you have a recording of your child saying the Pledge of Allegiance, go ahead, send it to me in MP3 or a WAV format, rhinoonair@gmail.com. Just include the child's first name and their hometown, and I'll give them a shout-out on air here on the Rhino Report. And what's better than a shout-out for me? I mean, that's a pretty high honor, right? I mean, come on, a podcast host? Anyway. Today, I can't believe it's today, or I can't believe today is February 1st. I feel like we have been talking about this since 2012, and some of us since 2008. I mean, some of us in 2008 knew that when Barack Obama won the presidency, that it was going to be an 8-year term. It was almost inevitable. Because like every president, he's very moderate his first 4 years, and then things just swing way to the left come 2012. Now, after the election in 2012, the very next day, the only thing I could think about, because I'm such a politi-nerd, is who is going to run in 2016? And who were the names floating around in your head? Well, Mitt Romney again, right? Maybe Santorum again, Chris Christie, Rudy Giuliani. These were names that start floating around, you know, in the back of the mind. Well, you know, here we are, the first day of the primary season, and who's number one? You have Donald Trump number one in Iowa in a tight race with Ted Cruz. I think everybody knew Hillary Clinton was going to be on the Democrat side. Of course, we all know this is her coronation of sorts, or so she thinks. You know, there's some items that came out over the weekend that may prevent that. We're going to talk about that a little bit too, probably in the second half of the show. But here we are. Today is like the first game of the year in baseball, okay? The last 6 or 7 months have been a long, protracted spring training. You work out your pitching rotation. You work out who's going to play in your infield. You know, you try different narratives, and you see how the polls respond to them. You try different debate tactics and see, again, if the polls respond to those tactics. You fine-tuned everything, and now it's time to go out and play the game. Today's game one. Now, there are several people who probably won't be playing a game two, and definitely not a game three. But we play the game with the teams or the candidates that will participate until about Super Tuesday, and then we start getting into the playoffs. The playoffs, now you're down to two or three candidates on each side, and they are running and gunning, trying to get as many delegates as possible just to get that nomination in July. Once you have the nomination, now it's the World Series. Now it's you, mano a mano, against the other team, the other candidate. And of course, Game 7 being in November this year. It all starts today, folks. Today is when it starts. And like I said, I'm a politi-nerd. I love this stuff. You know, people around me just can't stand the fact that all I do is, you know, talk politics. But it's something that affects all of us. It affects everything we do in our lives, whether it be a local congressman or all the way up to the president. You know, you have to pick somebody, now that all of the primaries are going to start, we're all going to have our chance, who best represents your values. Now, in Iowa, right now, if we take a look at the polls, it looks like maybe Donald Trump best represents the Republican values in Iowa. And putting all of his gaffes aside, okay, even on Sunday he went to church. He actually tweeted out, me and Milena are going to church, and then we're going to go on a tour of Iowa. I mean, like he hasn't been there before. But he goes to church, and they have the offering on the silver, or not the offering, the communion on the silver plate there, and he thinks it's to give money. He puts his hand in his pocket to try to put money on top of the communion. I mean, even with a gaffe like this, just a day before the election or the caucus in Iowa, Trump's still hanging on to a 7-point lead, according to Quinnipiac. Trump at 31, Cruz at 24, Rubio at 17. Those are the three you have to be concerned about right now. When you go down, you have Carson at 8, and you have Rand Paul at 4, Bush at 4, Huckabee at 3, Kasich, Fiorina, Christie at 2, Santorum at 1. This is between Trump, Cruz, and Rubio. Every poll shows that. If you go to the Emerson poll, which they not a great poll when it comes to the Republican field, much better on the Democratic side, but you have Trump at 27, Cruz at 26, showing a dead heat, Rubio at 22. That is a huge surge for Rubio. Now, I asked the question on Twitter a couple of days ago. Do you think that this back and forth between Trump and Cruz is going to leave an opening for Rubio to run up the middle? That's what the Rubio camp is hoping for. They're hoping that that seam is there, that they can just take the ball and run up the middle. Already, we've had two sports references in this opening. We did baseball and now football. But listen, Iowa is one of those places where you have to come in third. You have to be in the top three. If you're not in the top three, you're in big trouble. People like Huckabee and Kasich and Christie and apparently Gilmore can say they've started their campaign in New Hampshire all they want. That's not going to mitigate a 3 or 4% finish in Iowa. This has been built up for 4 years. I mean, you know, forget the fact that this election cycle really started last January. I mean, this has been built up for 4 years. You know, first to vote, Iowa caucus, it's all anyone could talk about. Even just for the last couple of months, there were countdowns on TVs, 30 days, 60 days, 45 days until Iowa caucus. And you're going to say you started in New Hampshire? It's not going to happen that way. It's not going to go over well. It's not going to go over well, especially with the folks in Iowa. Bush needs to have a good finish in Iowa. Whether he thinks so or not, he needs to have a good finish. And this Emerson poll with Rubio at 22% is not good news for the rest of the field, because you have to drop all the way back down to Huckabee. Huckabee in fourth place at 5% in this poll. Okay, Bush at 4%, Rand Paul at 3, Carson at 3, Fiorina at 2. Fiorina has spent more time on the ground in Iowa than any other candidate, and she's barely registering. Barely registering. All right. If we go, let's see, on the Democrat side with Emerson, Clinton at 51, Sanders at 43. So 8 points is the largest lead Clinton has seen over Sanders in Iowa for about the last 3 or 4 weeks. Remember, Sanders has made up a 40-point gap in Iowa. I think he may have peaked just a little early. Here's the problem with Sanders, and I don't want to talk a lot about it because this is not that kind of show, but Sanders has been pandering to the college vote, okay? Here's the problem with the college vote. Not everyone there is registered to vote at the University of Iowa or wherever they are. They have to go home to caucus. Or people just showed up to see this wacky guy, you know, this Larry David character, speak. These kids are not going to go out to vote. If the vote turns out, if it is an unprecedented amount of people, Sanders can win. But it's going to have to be north of 200,000 Democrat voters or caucus goers for Sanders to have a chance in Iowa. This stuff with Clinton, with these emails we heard over the weekend, we're going to talk about it a lot more later. It's going to affect her, but I don't think it's going to affect her in Iowa. I believe her supporters are pretty staunch in Iowa. But you can't pander to these college voters, okay? They're 18, they get to vote, congratulations, you hit 18, okay? That's not an achievement in and of itself. You just have the right to vote now. Pandering to them is kind of what did Ron Paul in a little bit. It's what's going to do Rand Paul in, is pandering to people who can't go out and vote. They're not going to drive 6-7 hours to go home just to caucus. Maybe a few of them in the Democrat, you know, club or the Republican club in their college might, but that's it. Most of these people, you know, when I went to college, I didn't register where I went to college. I was registered at home. I did an absentee ballot because that's the kind of nerd I am. But a lot of these people don't do that. They would have had to have gotten those ballots weeks ago. Most of them didn't. So these big, big showings that Sanders is having, and maybe Trump too, most of these people can't or won't actually go out and caucus for them. That's going to be a problem for them. All right, so real quickly in New Hampshire, Boston Herald has Trump at 38, Cruz at 13. Also, Sanders at 57 in New Hampshire over Clinton's 37. Then we go to the CNN WMUR poll out of New Hampshire, Trump at 30, Cruz at 12. So Trump really leading the way big time in New Hampshire. And the people who say that they are big state is New Hampshire, they're not showing so hot. Bush at 10% in Boston Herald, Kasich at 8%, and then in the CNN poll, you have Bush at 6 and Kasich at 9. Iowa's a big deal. If you win Iowa, it's not a guarantee you're going to win anything else, but at least it shows you're a strong candidate, and Trump leading in both polls right now. We have UMass Lowell, Trump at 38, Cruz at 12, Bush at 9, all right? They show Kasich at 9 also, and then UMass Lowell for the Democrat side, Sanders at 61 and Clinton at 30. So Sanders by a 31 point there and a 23 point advantage in the CNN poll. So really, New Hampshire has looked to be a lot clearer than Iowa so far in this cycle. That's usually the case. Iowa, you just never know. You just really never know who's going to go out. And now they have this big storm coming. You know, it may start just a little bit earlier than they had predicted, maybe 7 p.m. in the western and southern parts of Iowa, which 7 p.m. Central is when the caucus starts to begin in Iowa, 7 p.m. Central time. Listen, this is going to be probably a nail-biter on both sides. I don't know that we're going to wake up tomorrow morning with a clear winner. We'll, of course, have someone saying that they won, but we won't have a concession speech on the other side. You know, so we're going to see what happens here. You have 240,000 people showed up in 2008 on the Democrat side to caucus between Clinton, Obama, and John Edwards. That's a big number. They're only expecting about 120,000 this time, okay? So that is not going to bode well for Bernie Sanders. On the GOP side, 122,000 showed up in 2012. Of course, that was Santorum and Gingrich and Mitt Romney. They're projecting about 160,000 show up to caucus on the GOP side tonight. The larger that number, the more it's going to benefit Donald Trump, because that means he's energized new caucus voters. I heard it this weekend, and I said, oh my God, why did you do that? Were these mailers that went out from the Cruz campaign. I don't know if you guys heard about this. So what they did was they sent out mailers, and they were saying, voting violation. They were printed on like manila envelope type pieces of paper, and they were accusing or just showing people, I guess, what their voting grade was in caucuses, and not only their grade but the grade of their neighbors. All right, so kind of shaming people into go caucus, and I don't know that that's the step you want to take just a couple of days out. There are people I've seen a few interviews have said they got the mailer from the Cruz campaign, and now they're voting for Rubio. So it may be backfiring. I don't know. that shaming the voter is what you need to do in Iowa to get people out. You know, because here was mainstream media saying what a terrible idea it was for Donald Trump not to show up to the Iowa debate because it looks like he doesn't care about Iowans. Even Ted Cruz said, hey, listen, we were all here. We care about Iowans. And then 3 days later sends out mailers accusing people of not going out to caucus. I know this was in the effort to get them to come out. I got news for you. It's not going to work. It is not. That was a terrible, terrible idea. And you know why it was a terrible idea? This is how I know it was a terrible idea. Because MoveOn.org did it. If MoveOn.org does anything, it's a terrible idea. They did it in 2012. Terrible, terrible idea. I think it won't affect his real staunch supporters, but I think it will affect the people on the fence. Don't be surprised to see Rubio come in second in Iowa. That wouldn't surprise me at this point. I think the last week, Ted Cruz has kind of stammered and stumbled a little bit. He has a really good message, but the last week has not been as good as the Cruz campaign wants to lead on. I don't think he wins Iowa. If I have to be nailed down to a prediction today, I do believe it will be Donald Trump in Iowa, and I do believe it will be Donald Trump in New Hampshire. That could change. We have a couple of weeks to talk about that. These mailers, such a bad idea. Rubio did a similar mailer, not quite the same, but I think people give Rubio a little bit more slack. For some reason, he gets a little bit more slack from the voter. He gets a lot of slack from mainstream media. I mean, if you're watching Fox News today, they're all but campaigning for Rubio. It's terrible. It's terrible. Most of these places have turned on Donald Trump fully. You've had several online publications. I'm not going to name them, but they were pro-Donald Trump 3 or 4 weeks ago. Now they're very anti-Donald Trump, and they're very pro-Cruz, although they don't support anybody. I think you guys can figure out who I'm talking about. But like I said, I'm not going to name them on air. If you read the applicable online conservative news sites, you know exactly who I'm talking about. So, you know, we're going to have to really pay attention here. This is, I don't really think we're even going to know distinctly tonight who it is. I really don't. Gallup poll has Donald Trump with a 60% unfavorability rating. That's 8 points higher than Hillary Clinton's 52% unfavorability rating. It's crazy. People are voting for the candidates that nobody likes. And I wonder why that is. Because, and you can't point to the anti-establishment because Hillary Clinton is about as establishment as it comes. So I don't know why that is. People, I think in the case of Donald Trump, they don't like him, but they respect him. They respect what he's done. They respect the fact that he's unfiltered. With Hillary, the unfavorability rating is due to the Clinton Foundation and the emails and Benghazi. You can point to reasons why people don't like her, which if you take her unfavorability rating at 52% and you take what she would get in a national election at 48%, you can obviously see that the 52% of people are probably Republicans and the 48% are her staunch Democrat supporters. But, you know what kind of surprised me was you had Bernie Sanders also has a pretty high unfavorability rating of 31%. This, of course, has to be amongst the people in this country making over $40,000 a year because they know what his tax plan looks like. Ben Carson, 30% unfavorability rating. That's pretty high. Jeb Bush, 45% unfavorability rating. That, of course, due to his connections being a Bush, being the brother of George W., who in some circles is not looked at very favorably. Me, personally, I think he's a great guy. I think he's a great Republican. But I could see why his is a little bit higher. Chris Christie, 38% unfavorability. That, of course, because of Bridgegate, which is a total joke. Total joke. I don't know how many of you people out there have ever been to New Jersey or to New York. All 8 lanes on both levels of the George Washington Bridge are never open. They're never open. I've driven that bridge a million times. I have never seen every lane open. So one day, a lane is closed, and all of a sudden, Bridgegate. Ted Cruz, 37%. That, of course, going to be from the left a little bit. Marco Rubio, 33% unfavorability rating. So they're actually pretty high. If you look at all the unfavorability ratings amongst all the candidates, Democrat and Republican, nobody really likes anybody. You know, nobody really loves anybody. There's no one here with like an 18 or 20% unfavorability rating. Trump has the largest disparity between favorable and unfavorable. He's net unfavorable 27, and Clinton is net unfavorable 10. Bill Clinton had an unfavorability rating of 59% when he left office, and the highest Hillary Clinton has been is 53%. This is all from Gallup. Gallup gives you a lot of numbers. Sometimes their sampling is a little bit off, but they give you a lot of numbers. So getting back to Iowa a little bit here, what's going to happen to some candidates if they don't finish well? All right, Rick Santorum, Carly Fiorina, Huckabee, Rand Paul, Ben Carson, what's going to happen to them if they don't finish well? Are they going to make the trek to New Hampshire? You know, some people like Jeb Bush and Chris Christie and John Kasich have already moved their camps to New Hampshire. They're not going to hang around Iowa tonight. They're going to let the folks caucus, and they'll hear the results. They know they're in no danger of winning. They've already moved on. People like Rick Santorum, okay? Rick Santorum won the caucus in 2012. Kind of a surprise, but he still won. But the guy's got no money. He's got no money in the bank right now. I believe if he finishes under 5%, then Rick Santorum will probably bow out this week. Mike Huckabee, here's a guy who has really gone after Ted Cruz a little bit recently, and it hasn't really worked out for him. He's picked up a couple of the evangelical votes along the way, but again, another guy, if he finishes under 5%, I think Huckabee is going to call it a day. I've said many times, I think Mike Huckabee would make a great president. He just doesn't resonate with people right now. Carly Fiorina, plenty of money in the tills, but has spent so much time in Iowa and still only polling at about 2%, that may be the writing on the wall, okay? Because she's not polling a whole lot better in New Hampshire. And she had her little sparkler pop back in, September, late August, when Fox News went after Donald Trump again, and they elevated Carly Fiorina, and this whole thing with her ugly face or whatever the heck it was. She had her moment. She couldn't, you know, keep that momentum going, and she has since faded, never yet to recoup at all. So I think maybe she'll get through New Hampshire, maybe she'll get to South Carolina, but I think that will be it for Carly Fiorina. All the money in the world in her tills, but sometimes money doesn't buy everything. So to say Donald Trump is in the lead because of his money, well, here's Carly Fiorina with a rather large war chest, not doing so hot. Another one, Rand Paul. Okay, Rand Paul has to focus on his senatorial reelection, which he may face a challenger in the primary, and he has to also win the general. That, to him and to his state, a big states' rights guy, has to be more important than trying this bid at the presidency. Maybe it's just not Rand Paul's time yet. I liked Rand Paul. When Rand Paul announced, it was shortly after Ted Cruz, about 4 or 5 years ago, whatever the heck it was, his speech was really good. His speech was really, really good, and Rand Paul has a lot of really good things to say. I just don't know that we're in a place right now to compromise our defense spending and our position or positioning around the world militarily, which I think is why Rand Paul has not resonated all that well. If he was going to resonate anywhere, it would be amongst the Iowa GOP voters, and he really hasn't. So I think Rand Paul may, if he doesn't get 5% or even 7%, he may start to call this a day too. Ben Carson was doing so well. He was doing really well. He was even higher than Trump in Iowa for a couple of weeks there. It was back in late November. He was surging, but yet another guy who hasn't been able to just roll with that momentum. He couldn't sustain it. Maybe that's because he tried to stab his friend. Maybe that's because he tried to hit his mom in the head with a hammer. Who knows? Who knows with the stories? But you know what? If you think about it, he tried to stab someone with a knife, tried to hit someone in the head. This guy was a neurosurgeon from day one. From day one, he was a neurosurgeon. Anyway, I make a joke there. Maybe it's not so funny. He's polling under 10%. He's got some money in the tills. I think he'll probably stick it out through at least Nevada. I think he'll be in for Iowa, definitely. We know that, of course. New Hampshire, definitely. South Carolina, I think Nevada will be where the Carson camp decides maybe to fold up camp. But who knows? He could surge. He could. Carson has this weird way of just kind of, one day he's at 9% in the poll, and the next day he's at 30%. He has this weird way about him. Very, very smart guy. Again, would make an unbelievable president. So maybe his voters, you know, maybe they come together. He has said he has 40,000 pledged caucus goers tonight. 40,000. If he gets 40,000 people to vote for him tonight, he wins Iowa. When there's 8 or 9 candidates in the field, if you can get 40,000 out of 120,000, he's going to win. So if that's the case, I'm 100% wrong here. And so is everybody else. But he has to get 40,000 people out. They've signed a pledge to caucus for him. That would be amazing. That would be your Rick Santorum of 2016. I don't think it will happen. But hey, you never know. Weirder things have happened. Iowa's really weird. I mean, they're not known for picking the candidate. Really, New Hampshire has a lot more of that distinction. But they're really good at culling the field. Because there's no one you can look to or point to say, well, they didn't do well in Iowa, so they had to drop out, but they would have been an amazing president. It's hard to find somebody of that magnitude. So Iowa has a very important job tonight. I know we're all going to be watching, and we're all going to be sitting there and trying to get on that cell phone app they have now that shows you when the caucus numbers come back, real time. Fox News is going to have a thing. You know, CNN and MSNBC. Well, maybe MSNBC will be playing Lockup or something, because that's the highest rated show on their network, or reruns of Lockup from 20 years ago. But I'm excited. If you can't tell, I'm excited. I think that this is our process. This is our system, and it starts to work today. Today, we really start to see how fed up people are. Because if Republicans can get 160 or 170,000 people out tonight, that is not good news for the Democrats. Now, the Democrats always draw a little bigger in this caucus because they have more registered Democrats in Iowa. But Republicans, if they can get out 30 or 40,000 more people than they did in 2012, when people were a little fed up, it's not going to bode well for the Democrats come 2016 November. But if you watch the news at all today or read any of the mainstream media newspapers, they're all saying how they're conceding that Trump may win tonight. They're all conceding Trump may win, but he can't win the general. That's the narrative today. Folks, don't believe it. Because if Trump is the candidate, and I know some of you out there don't like him, we are all going to coalesce around him. Because that's who we are. There's nobody out there who likes Ted Cruz who will support Hillary Clinton over Trump. There's no one out there who likes Carly Fiorina who will support Bernie Sanders over Trump. So I think mainstream media is reading this all wrong. There were a lot of us that said back in August that Trump will probably win Iowa. And mainstream media was telling you, no, 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 they can't do it. He can't do it. There's no way Trump could win a grassroots state like Iowa. Here we are, just hours away from the first caucus in Iowa, and Trump has a lead in just about every poll. Don't listen to mainstream media. They have no idea what they're talking about. They just don't. They have their narrative, too. They have a narrative. Even Fox. Fox, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, they all have a narrative. They all have someone that they want to be the president. Again, it's all about access. All about access. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk, again, a little bit more about Iowa. We're going to talk about these Hillary emails that came out over the weekend. Okay, big bad news for the Hillary camp, and they are in full spin and damage control as we speak right now. So is the White House, and we're going to get into that. We're also going to talk about, why is the president going to a mosque, and especially a mosque that's associated with terrorism? We're going to talk about that too. But while we're on break, head over to Twitter, give me a follow, at Rhino On Air. That's at Rhino, R-Y-N-O, On Air. Or you can email me, as always, rhinoonair@gmail.com. Check out the rwbnetwork.com website. Some new articles going up. Our writer Tina has one going up today. I'll get that on the site just as soon as we finish our broadcast today. But first, here's a little word from, well, me.
You are listening to The Rhino Report.
She got chunked.
always right. Now streaming on Red State Talk Radio.
You are very rude.
Hey guys, your friend and your host, The Rhino, here. There are three ways you can get involved with The Rhino Report and the RWB Network. Here they are. Listen up. Number one, you can be a writer for one of the fastest-growing grassroots conservative media outlets out there. Send me a submission, and I'll read it, and we'll get you published on the RWB Network website. We see hundreds and hundreds of unique hits every single day. Number two, if you want to hear The Rhino Report in your local area, all you have to do is go to your local radio station's website and find the program director's email address. They're always pretty prominent there. Send them an email, say you want to hear the Rhino Report on your local AM or FM station, and I guarantee you, if just one person emails the program director, they will find me and will be on your airwaves. The third way to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report and actually make a little bit of money is if you have a little bit of sales experience or even none at all, shoot me an email. We're looking for people who want to sell some advertising space. The show is growing and so can your bank account. So those are three ways to get involved with the RWB Network and the Rhino Report. I'll see you back in about 20 seconds.
Talk radio the way the founding fathers would have done it.
I'm just a man trying to make his mark on history.
Red State Talk Radio.
This is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. Let us never forget that police lives matter.
All right, welcome back to The Rhino Report. I am your host and your friend, The Rhino. Thank you for joining me for the second half of today's show. If you haven't done so already, head over to rwbnetwork.com, pick up your sweatshirt, Pledge of Allegiance, American flag on the back, stay warm, be patriotic. Also, some coffee mugs are there also. And we have a new article going up today from Tina. I'll have one up tomorrow, so check it out. There's some cool stuff there. The site's growing every day, and that's all because of you guys. So, since we're talking about Iowa, right? We're talking about Iowa because we have to talk about Iowa because it's such a big deal today. Iowa's weird for another reason. They're also weird because they're one of the few places where networks like Fox and CNN, they do entrance polls as opposed to exit polls. They'll ask people before they go in who they're going to caucus for, not who did they caucus for. So we'll start seeing some of these entrance poll numbers. Now, I know a lot of places got away from this stuff after the 2000 election because we all know how that started to sway the election, and then Gore got all pissy and decided the icebergs were melting. But I think this year we're going to see somewhat of a resurgence of these entrance polls, and but for the Republican side, that may be a factor in determining the outcome later on in the night. However, on the Democrat side, probably not so much, because they caucus a little bit differently. See, on the Republican side, you can caucus for whoever you want to caucus for, okay? It's just a proportional allocation of delegates. But on the Democrat side, if a candidate does not reach the 15% threshold, they must either choose not to go with anybody or align with a different camp. So maybe that entrance poll, people who are saying O'Malley or maybe even Sanders in some of these more Hillary type areas, it may not be as well of an indicator as it is on the Republican side. So, but then again, who knows? We just never know, especially in Iowa. What was funny, I was watching some people on TV today and they are sick. They are sick and tired of seeing ads on TV. I guess there's just no space for your local, you know, businesses to advertise or your car dealerships or whatever it may be, because all of the ad space is taken up by these candidates, and the networks will gladly sell them these spaces because it's becoming very, very expensive. Like I said in the opening, candidates have spent over $150 million in Iowa this year. I don't know if that's a record, but I gotta tell you, it's gotta be close. I don't know what the previous number was for past election years, but $150 million in one state, that's, I mean, imagine a war chest you would have to have to spend that kind of money in 50 states. Now, I know it wouldn't have to happen in 50 because there's certain just blue states and certain just red states. But I've made the case in the past that someone like Donald Trump could convert a couple of blue states, mainly New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. But could you imagine, even if you had to spend that kind of money in 30 states or even 10 states, you need over $1 billion just to do it in 10 states. I mean, it's really just an amazing amount of money that's being spent. But you know what? Everybody's spending money on the Republican side. These are all good people. They're all good people. And any one of them would make a much, much better president than Clinton, Sanders, Biden, Elizabeth Warren, any of these political hacks, you know? I thought it was funny that I didn't realize, I guess because I don't live in Vermont, but Bernie Sanders at 74 years old is the junior senator from the Vermont. Isn't that ridiculous? 74 years old, he's the junior senator. That's like when John Kerry was running against George Bush in 2004. George Bush had made the comment that John Kerry is the conservative senator from Massachusetts, of course referring to Ted Kennedy being the other one. But yeah, so amazing amounts of money are being spent. We're going to have entrance polls. We're going to have some numbers start rolling in probably somewhere around 9 o'clock Eastern, so 8 o'clock Central. There'll be some numbers. Some of the smaller districts will start to report, and we're going to see where it goes. I'm very curious. Will there be a huge upset like a Rubio or a Carson? It's very possible. You just can't rule it out. You can rule out like Kasich. You can rule out probably Christie. You could rule out probably Fiorina. But I don't know that you can rule out the entire field. I don't know that you can do that. But that is a good thing. It's a good thing. We don't like runaways. Runaways are not good for democracy. There always has to be loyal opposition. I hate when people run unopposed, especially in local elections. I don't care if you put the janitor from the high school up. Somebody has to run. There always has to be loyal opposition. And in the Republican Party, there's lots of loyal sort of opposition. Everybody has the same running theme, right? Defund Obamacare, figure out immigration, whether it be build a wall or some form of pathway. At least there's a running theme. And it's just where they fall on each side of the line. So, again, when you guys go to caucus or you go to primary, wherever you guys are out there in internet radio world, just pick the person who you feel best represents your values, not necessarily who you think could beat Hillary Clinton, because I don't think Hillary Clinton will be the nominee. All right, so Sarah Palin did her first TV interview since coming out in support of Donald Trump, and she chose, of all places, to go on the Today Show on NBC this morning, which I could have told her was going to be a bad idea. That's never a good idea for anyone just to the right of center, or even center, to be on the Today Show with Matt Lauer and Samantha Guthrie. She shows up on the show, and she feels like, or I guess she was told she was going to be asked about the Iowa caucus and about how Trump is doing and where she's been campaigning for him or stumping for him. And instead, they turned the interview into a question and answer session about her son and about her son having PTSD. Of course, he's former military and he's had some problems lately. In fact, the night that Sarah Palin had decided that she was going to endorse Trump, the night before, he had a domestic dispute with his girlfriend. There was a gun involved, some alcohol involved. She says he has PTSD. She also sort of inferred that this was President Obama's fault. She backed it up a little bit. This is what she said. So she was being asked about her son, Track, his domestic violence arrest. And she said, "Let's start by, you guys brought me here to talk about Iowa politics and the caucus tonight, not to talk about my kids, and that was a promise, okay? But as things go in the world of media, you guys don't always keep your promises, evidently. If you ever thought for a second that Matt Lauer or Samantha Guthrie were going to keep their promise to you, they'll keep a promise to Hillary Clinton. They'll keep a promise to Barack Obama. They will not keep a promise to Sarah Palin. That I can tell you. And again, you have her going on Today Show, which is on NBC. NBC, of course, the host of Saturday Night Live, the home network, and SNL has done nothing but rip apart Palin for the last 8 years. So why you thought you'd get a fair shake on NBC is really beyond me. These Republican candidates, for the most part, and their supporters need to stop going on these networks. Okay? You have Hillary Clinton will not go on Fox News. She won't do it. The DNC won't let Fox News host a Democrat debate. So why are these candidates going on their networks too? You know you're not going to get a fair shake. So this didn't turn out well. Palin looked perturbed. She didn't look particularly mad. She just said she wanted to talk about the campaign and not talk about her son. And she didn't blame Obama for the PTSD. She just blamed the treatment of veterans under this administration. That was in the Daily Mail, did an article about it. You guys should read the Daily Mail. It's pretty good, not too bad. Not as bad as, let's just say, the Daily Beast, which is much, much worse, as pointed out to me on Twitter today. So what's going on with Clinton, okay? That was my segue. So we're going to go from really bad Daily Beast, the segue into Clinton. Because of course, the Daily Beast is what Bill Clinton calls Hillary every morning. So, ba-dum-bum. Anyway. This weekend, we found out that 22 emails on Hillary Clinton's server were classified top secret or higher. This is in addition to the 3 of the SAP emails that we found out about 2 weeks ago. Okay? This is not good. 22 emails classified as top secret or higher on her private server, to me, equates to 22 felonies. 22 felonies. If me or you had even one of these emails on our computer, we'd be facing probably at least 5 years in prison, if not some sort of terrorist trumped-up charge, okay? Well, that's because we're conservatives and they target us. But no, not Hillary. Hillary is not scared of indictment. She went on ABC, okay, and it was this week on Sunday with George Stephanopoulos, who should not be interviewing Hillary Clinton since he worked for them. But anyway, she goes on the show, and he asks her about the emails that were found, and she replies that, well, this whole email thing is kind of like Benghazi, right? It's been blown out of proportion, and it's just the far right is trying to conspire against her. Well, take a listen to what she said. This was almost unbelievable. Almost unbelievable. Take a listen. Here it is.
In newspaper articles. So let's just get it out. Let's see what it is and let the American people draw their own conclusions. This is very much like Benghazi, George. You know, the Republicans are going to continue to use it, beat up on me. I understand that. That's the way they are. But after 11 hours of testimony, answering every single question in public, which I had requested for many months, I think it's pretty clear they're grasping at straws, and this will turn out the same.
Finally, on this matter, you know, a few months back.
Oh, it's all the Republicans' fault. It's all our fault. We are the ones that put the emails on her server. It's all our fault. Did you guys hear that? I could play it again, but you know what? Whenever I hear her speak, my ears start to bleed. So I'm not going to put it on again. But it's our fault. It's the Republicans' fault. It's the Republicans' fault that she had classified information, top secret SAP information on her server. And now, of course, they're going into the whole thing that these were classified retroactively, which we all know is a sham. That is not the case. Because first it was, there's nothing on there, right? It's yoga sessions and planning Chelsea's wedding and whatever else, all right? And then she said, well, Bill Clinton did it. And Bill Clinton said, I've never sent an email in my life. He threw her completely under the bus, which was pretty funny, actually. And then it was, well, they weren't marked classified. And then now it's turned into, well, they reclassified them later. Do you ever get the sense that you're being told the truth from Hillary Clinton? I can't imagine anybody believing a word that comes out of this woman's mouth. I can't believe it. All right, so she was asked also in this interview about a document she signed in 2009. It was a non-disclosure agreement which acknowledged that markings are irrelevant and that classified information is marked or unmarked and includes oral communication. Now, what would you say to somebody? Hey, what I'm about to tell you is classified or top secret. No, it doesn't matter. You're the Secretary of State. Everything you do is classified. Everything. Especially when it comes to operational things. Things of military operational manners. Which is what, I guess, these emails are starting to imply. There are reports that some of these emails even were to the president. were to Barack Obama. There was one report that 18 of these emails were between her and the president. And this undercuts the president's statement just months ago where he said he had no idea that she was using a private server. Remember? He had no idea. He learned about it in the news. Well, he was emailing her. He didn't happen to look up and say, hey, it says Hillary at gmail.com. I mean, this is it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. But not to be outdone, there may be a thread of emails in this batch. Maybe the batch that hasn't been released yet, or the batch that was released, I can't confirm which batch it was from, that had Sidney Blumenthal in them. Now, who's Sidney Blumenthal? Well, he's a man who's been banned from working in the State Department in any governmental capacity, okay? Hillary swore, all right, under oath, that Sidney Blumenthal was not an advisor of hers, official or unofficial. But, as it turns out, this man may have been privy to classified top secret or SAP information, not working for the State Department, being paid by the Clinton Foundation to work as sort of an off-the-books confidant or advisor to Hillary Clinton. That is not confirmed. That's not confirmed. But that is something that is kicking around right now. That's coming from sources, I guess, inside the investigation. So I cannot confirm that. Here on the show, I don't confirm anything. I just report what I read, and I tell you how to decipher it, all right? But this is not looking good for Hillary. I do believe that the FBI will move to indict her, or at least suggest to the DOJ to indict her. Now, this becomes a big problematic situation for the White House, okay? Does Barack Obama tell Loretta Lynch to indict, or does he say to not indict? If he says to indict, you have to assume that he has a guy like Joe Biden ready to go, or Elizabeth Warren, because he's not going to support Bernie Sanders. He just won't. We are in the legacy year of this presidency. He does not want this to be hampered by this garbage with Hillary Clinton, or he doesn't want it. You know, he doesn't want to look like he's supporting this socialist, because he'll go down in the history books as somebody who supported a socialist candidate. And Mr. Obama is all about his image. He doesn't care about optics. We know that. We know he goes and plays golf right after a beheading of a U.S. journalist. But he cares about his image. He cares about how the history books will portray him. So does he tell the DOJ to indict? Or does he say to not indict and then face a backlash of epic proportions? Because if the FBI suggests to do this, and it gets out that the FBI suggested to indict, and they did not indict, there will be a lot to answer for, things that Josh Earnest won't be able to cover in his terrible press conferences. I mean, these things are just BS spewed at 100 miles an hour. And you can see it. You know how you can tell when Josh Earnest is lying? His lips are moving. It's pretty easy. So I don't know where this is going to go. I don't believe Hillary's the candidate. Whether they indict, they don't indict, I do believe she will have to pull out of this, because this is not good. This is not good. This is tangible, factual evidence that will be against her. And who knows? Maybe in some batch of emails, there will be some answers about Benghazi. It's very possible. Maybe these had something to do with it. We just don't know. We just don't know. But there is the thought, or there is the possibility, that the president is involved in these emails as well, which is not going to look good for him either. The White House and the Hillary camp are in spin control. They're in damage control. And this is going to be its own circus unto itself. All right. Speaking of terrible optics. So as Iowa is going on, all right, what the president is going to do is he's going to visit a mosque in Baltimore. It'll be the first presidential visit to a mosque in history. He's going to visit the Islamic Society of Baltimore. Now, all right, what's wrong with that, right? What's wrong with the president reaching out and saying we welcome all people? Well, this mosque has some pretty close ties to terrorism, okay? The Islamic Society of Baltimore is part of a network of mosques controlled by the Islamic Society of North America. They were an unindicted co-conspirator in the 2008 Holy Land Foundation terror case, all right? Also, their imam, Muhammad Adam al-Sheikh, was there for a total of 15 years. He was also a leading figure in the Muslim Brotherhood in Sudan during the 70s, all right? And he also he was also the co-founder of the Muslim American Society in Church Falls, Virginia. Okay, they're controlled also by the Muslim Brotherhood. So this guy is is not somebody you really want to be affiliated with. However, when this El Sheikh guy was in Baltimore, he was a regional director for the Islamic American Relief Agency. But that group is a part of the Islamic African Relief Agency, which the Treasury Department said provided funds to Osama bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, as well as other terrorist organizations. So the president is visiting a mosque well linked to terrorism. That is a sign that our president he doesn't see the real problem here. He doesn't see Islam as being the problem. In fact, he wants to pander to it. Now, we all know that the president is pretty well linked to the Muslim Brotherhood, okay? You don't have to look much further than Egypt to know that that's the case. However, the optics are terrible, and they couldn't happen at a worse time for someone like Hillary Clinton, who has associated herself at every step of the way with Barack Obama. Now, the White House is saying that this is just kind of a meet and greet. It's to say we stand with you and we're all inclusive as a nation. But you couldn't pick a different mosque? You couldn't pick a mosque that wasn't tied to terrorism? It's a slap in the face to the entire country. On the entire country. Now, this on the heels of, if you remember the 10 U.S. sailors who were captured or taken hostage by the Iranian Navy, well, The Ayatollah Khamenei has given four commanders in the Iranian Navy, along with Admiral Ali Fadavi, what they call the Order of Fatah Medal. This is like their Medal of Honor in Iran. This is what they get when they do some big courageous act. And when the Ayatollah was addressing the committee, in front of which these five members were getting this Medal of Fatah or Order of Fatah Medal, he said that they were capturing intruding U.S. Navy sailors. The Ayatollah Khamenei even sent out a tweet. I mean, this guy tweets, right? He sent out a tweet saying, Order of Fatah given by Chief Commander of Armed Forces to IRGC Navy commanders who captured intruding U.S. Marines. This went out yesterday at 6 o'clock in the morning. I imagine that's local time in Iran. Anyway, first of all, they weren't Marines. They were U.S. Navy sailors. So get it right, idiot. Second of all, this on the heels of receiving $150 billion from the U.S. government, not to mention the $1.7 billion ransom that was paid to get these sailors back, which the government will never admit to, right? 24 hours after these sailors were released, remember, kneeling down in the surrender position with guns to their head, released that the U.S. government sent them $1.7 billion. What was that, a retainer for the $150 billion they were going to send later? And the White House called that a good tax situation for the American public. A good tax situation for the American public. Unbelievable, folks. Unbelievable. These guys are getting medals of honor for capturing U.S. sailors, and our president is visiting a mosque with ties to terrorism. I don't know. Maybe England has it right. England has now sentenced a mother to 6 years in prison for leaving England, going to live in the Islamic State, and then coming back. This was Tarina Shakil. She's 26 years old. She was a British citizen. She left Birmingham in central England, and she went to go live in the Islamic State. And there are pictures of her wearing different ISIS garb, and she dressed her baby son up in ISIS garb. Well, she didn't like it so much, because women don't like living in the Islamic State for some reason under Sharia law. Gee, I wonder why. And she came back. Well, she came back, and the judge said, guess what? You're going to prison for 6 years, because you left, you went, you were aligned with the Islamic State, and now you come back and we're putting you in jail. Maybe our judges should learn a lesson from this one British magistrate. All right, folks, we're at the end of the rope here. We're at the end of time, and I can't wait for tonight to watch these results roll in. We're going to talk all about it on Wednesday. But for now, a huge thank you to those men and women serving our country at home and abroad. Also, a huge thank you to those in the law enforcement community. Thank you for all you do. Thank you for all your hard work. We all depend on you. God bless all of you. God bless all your families. And until Wednesday, I'm the Rhino, and I'm out.
You've been listening to the Rhino Report. Always right.